Hey, what's going on? Welcome to The Doug Show. I'm Doug Cunnington, and this is part two of the interview with Paul Lipsky. Today, we're going to talk about AI specifically, although there's a blend of YouTube and AI in both of the episodes. If you missed part one, it was just last week, so definitely want to check that out. We recorded this in one session, so I just divided the conversation based on topic as well as I could. Great conversation with Paul, really fun to talk to, and I'll link up so you can check out his YouTube channel and see how he's covering AI, which I get into some of the, you know, the details of. It's kind of an issue with some other channels. I don't think Paul does this, but some other channels, like a new release, something new happens in the AI world, and it's a this changes everything situation every single week, sometimes multiple times a week, which obviously cannot be true because as we go through it, it didn't change everything, and things are, you know, changing slowly. Every now and then they get it right, but whatever, broken clock kind of situation. One interesting thing is I just did an interview with a friend of mine who has a podcast called The FI Show, Financial Independence Show. And I was on there 6 years ago talking about Amazon affiliates and, you know, what I was doing there. I think I was probably promoting my course in a general sense, although I didn't sell directly. I just talked about the business model and encouraged people to follow along over on YouTube or the podcast or whatever. We talked about a bunch of stuff yesterday in the interview, but one thing that my friend Cody pointed out was that I've had a couple anti-AI themed podcast episodes. And really, it's just a pushback and skepticism that I have personally. But I gave some really good examples, like through the conversation. Maybe I had a lot of caffeine. I was a little riled up, but I gave some very specific examples of like how AI can mislead you when there's not much information and, you know, how that might happen. So I don't know. Like, I'm skeptical. I use AI in certain ways, but I found where it's effective for me, where it doesn't make me lazy. You know, there's ways to use AI where you're letting your critical problem-solving skills atrophy. And I think that could be an issue, not directly on the stuff that you're working on, but like in a greater sense, if you're just not as, mentally nimble, so to speak. The specific example that I gave to him, this is a weird intro for, we're about to talk about AI, but I just want to give this example. So I just got a new vintage tube amp. It's from the 60s, and it's a Gibson Discover Tremolo. Super cool. Sounds awesome. I'll tell a future story about what happened, but I got it less than a week ago, and then I turned it up too loud for a little while, and I have to take it to a repair shop, basically. I was rocking way too hard, so that'll be a future story I'll tell you about later. But anyway, there's not that much information about this specific amp, and you may be surprised, but Gibson amps were not as popular as like Fender amps, and there's a lot of information on Fender amps, and you can like look things up and see the circuits and the schematics and all that stuff very easily for a lot of stuff. But in the 60s, I mean, it's hard to have like the user manual from the 1960s to find a PDF on that. You might be able to find one. The other thing is like they didn't keep great records like within the company back then. So, I mean, they didn't have computers, right? So it's literally like on pieces of paper filed. Companies go out of business, divisions close, they stop making amps, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so there's not a ton of information out there. And one thing that can happen is the AI, all the AI LLMs out there, right? They're getting information from the internet, from books, from different sources on YouTube, for example, because there's transcripts, specifically Gemini, because Google and YouTube are, you know, together. Same company. And basically, if I were to publish, because any old asshole could publish something on YouTube, right? And say basically whatever they want, there's not much information on forums, web pages, on Reddit, on this specific AMP, and probably like dozens and dozens of others. So there's not much info. So I probably could create a handful of videos with essentially made up information about this AMP and put it on YouTube, and it would very quickly be indexed into, Gemini, LLM, Google search, and that would taint the results. I mean, there's not much info, so it'd be pretty simple to do. Additionally, if I went and maybe went to Reddit and put some information there, that's another way. So all of a sudden, I'm in a situation where like the information that I'm finding about old amps, it's not accurate. The other thing, I just ordered, I have a couple speakers coming in for this other amp, and now I'm rambling on, but stick with me. I'm almost done. I got some speakers. It's a new speaker. It's a new speaker that came out about a year ago, but there's virtually no information. Even if you go to like big music retailers like Sweetwater.com, there's no reviews on there. It's sort of a higher end set of speakers, and the information on them is lacking. Even from the company, there's only like a few sentences about the speaker, and it's not very descriptive. So there's only like one forum thread, and it's a couple people like talking past each other. One person giving like firsthand information, and then other people that haven't tried the speaker giving their opinions on what's going on. So very couple simple examples, one from, you know, yesteryear vintage amplifiers where there's not much information, probably a little inaccurate, can be, you know, the data can be poisoned super easily. And then there's new information that's lacking on a brand new product that came out in 2025. And here, even a year later, it's just kind of a rare product. And people are not, in fact, I'm like, I should probably do a video. I would probably rank because I search for information. There's very little information on this George Alessandro speaker out there. So anyway, very long intro. I had caffeine earlier as well. So anyway, here's the rest of the interview with Paul. Be sure to check out his channel. Thanks for listening to The Rant. I guess it's kind of a transition question, but one sort of still YouTube topic is the AI area. So it's a huge growth area. I was interested in AI, so I created a couple of videos. They actually did really well, but I kind of, my interest wasn't as high as yours. So I knew that I wouldn't be able to do it like for the long haul. But one interesting thing is like, you sort of pivoted in 2025, which in my opinion, everyone probably back then would say like that market is saturated. Like a YouTuber talking about AI, there's so many out there. Do you have any observations on the saturation / any advice for people that are thinking, I would do, like I'm passionate about AI, I would do videos on AI, but I feel like I'm late to the game?
I would tell them that they are thinking about YouTube wrong. YouTube these days is very interesting because you can have a brand new channel with no subscribers, and you can make three videos. The first two bomb, the fourth one bombs, and the third one gets 250,000 views. And I see it happening all the time. There's a lot of really good YouTubers I follow, and their videos get 1,000 views, 150,000 views, 2,000 views, 250,000 views, 3,000 views. Yeah. It's very, very easy. And I wouldn't say it's easy. It's very common now to have videos pop off, even if you're a small subscriber, YouTuber.
Correct. Yeah. And I've seen the same thing where I'm just like, where did this channel come? And then as we're YouTubers, I look back at their channel and I'm like, oh, wow. Like this one just like exploded way outside their audience, and they get new subscribers, but like the number of views for that top video is nowhere close to the number of subscribers they have. It's tiny.
Yeah.
And the other thing is like I have started to see channels with like 1 million subscribers, and most of their views are in like the tens of thousands, and occasionally they'll get a couple hundred thousand, but it's kind of odd because back in the day, kind of the metric the number of views should be similar to the number of subscribers that you have, but it's completely left kilter. The algorithm works differently.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And yeah, you know, like you said, the opposite can be true. So like I have some videos that bomb. I posted one the earliest week, it totally bombed. And
yeah,
you know, you can get in your head about that. And I do, but then you make another one and that does well, knock on wood. So it happens.
On average, like what's your sort of target where you're like, I'm not going to feel bad if a video gets X number of views. And then has it slowly crept up? Like how do you have that baseline?
It's hard. Cause you really do have to, just like with the algorithm in general, you really do have to think of every video individually, because certain topics I know usually do really well on my channel and others do less well. So you have to think of it as like on a topic basis. Like every week I have my AI news recap that usually gets 50,000 views, but then 2 weeks later, or even a week later, it stops getting views because it's only timely for a week. And I have other videos I posted and I was like, man, like I really thought that video would do well. You know, right when you log into YouTube, it tells you the ranking of your video, as you know, that like is psychologically so damning because you're like, oh, that video is 10 out of 10 instead of being 1 out of 10 or in the middle. But then over the next few weeks, it just picks up and it does better. And it's, yeah. So I don't even remember what your question was, but...
I don't remember anything. Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned earlier that you stay informed about like news through Twitter, primarily X.
Yeah.
So any tips on that? I mean, it seems like it's a fairly straightforward thing to like automate, have alerts set up, that kind of thing. But like, how do you do it? Like just from a tutorial kind of approach, like by step.
Yeah, pretty simple. So download the X app and find some accounts that like if there's a topic you want to follow. So maybe it's you want to get alerted every time Google releases an update to Gemini. Follow Gemini and turn on alerts, and then you'll get a notification on your phone. If you're like, okay, like this is not that exciting, just dismiss it. If it's exciting, I bookmark it, and then I revisit my bookmarks later and just see like, oh yeah, this was a topic I wanted to make a video about where I wanted to cover in my weekly news recap. So that's just as simple as that. And then again, I have my AI agent check Twitter once an hour to make sure I didn't miss anything. And I think I'm going to turn, it's gotten really good. So I think I'm going to turn or delete the X app from my phone because it's one of those apps that like really sucks me in and just trust the agent. I think I'm almost there. I just got to give it a little more guidance.
Gotcha. How do you stay excited about all the news? Because like, you know, and we were talking and there's new stuff kind of constantly. Mm-hmm. And it would be like an overload to the system if everything really got... Yeah, you know what I'm asking.
Yeah, maybe I am just overloaded. Maybe I do feel like maybe my, was it like cortisol or dopamine is something broke there recently. But yeah, I just am excited by it. I don't know if there's a way for me to say how I get excited about it. It's just like natural for me. I think because I know the tools so well, or at least I think I do. And so like when there is a new update, I understand pretty quickly like whether it's going to be something really cool and like exciting and what is cool about it. So I think like that is what keeps me excited. Like the more you understand about it, the more these new things you're like, oh, that solves that problem. Like, oh, that's so much better than the way it was before.
Okay. And the perfect answer where, I mean, it's like a pure, like you're actually interested. It's not something you're going to burn out. You may look around here, you could see more guitars than there were before and amps and stuff. I'm passionate about that. So I could like read and research, and I haven't, I'm not going to do a guitar channel or anything like that, but cause that would like feed the beast even more, but, it's a pure interest. So you're just like, this is cool. Like I want to test this tool out or whatever. Now, for the tutorials and I guess actually using the tools, how do you go about learning how to do a task well enough to teach it, especially if it's outside of your area? Because I assume like there's some stuff that you want or need to cover that is not a problem that you need to solve in your business. It's not something that you need to do. So how do you go about like learning it in a real way well enough to teach it?
Yeah, I think there's a few layers to that. So first, I try not to go out of my lane too much.
Okay.
So if you look on YouTube and start searching for AI, I still think the majority of the videos you're going to find are from coders and developers, or videos for coders and developers. That's not my background. I don't talk about that. I don't speak the same language that those YouTubers speak. I watch some of their videos and I don't understand what they're saying, to be honest. And I think that's okay. And I've considered learning, and I decided I don't want to, because I want to be able to always be able to communicate in a way that my audience understands. And my audience aren't developers. They're regular people who just want to learn how to use AI for productivity, or to build a business, or to help their business, things like that. So I think sort of staying in my lane helps a lot. And then because I use these tools every day and have already done so many tutorials on them, it's pretty easy for me to pick up what's new and to quickly understand it and to be able to articulate that for a video. And there are enough possible use cases for these new tools that I don't really ever have a problem coming up with ideas for how to use them for myself. One thing I've struggled with on YouTube is pretty much every video I make, I show how to use a tool and I talk about use cases. And then I always receive a comment from someone saying, oh, those are the dumbest use cases. Like, I'm not a YouTuber. That's not going to help me, like learning how to like script a video using AI. And so then I'll make one that helps teachers. And then people are like, that's the dumbest use case. I'm not a teacher. I'm like, oh, okay. I just learned something. I can't satisfy everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's perfect. It's like the audience identifies itself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which actually that leads me to something like in the back of my head, perfect example. I used to do a lot of like keyword research and stuff. And I know you did back in the day for, you know, various things that we've worked on. Mm-hmm. And one of the best sort of keyword areas was like X, like how to do X for Y, where Y is a specific kind of person, a profession or whatever. So it's like best productivity tools for teachers, lawyers, like you could fill in a list of occupations, right? Endless videos, very niche down. And, you know, back in the day from an SEO standpoint, it like helped you develop like expertise in that how-to area because you served all these different use cases. Is that an approach that you take, or is it one that's useful from like a video creation standpoint?
Sort of. So I don't use any like tools for that, but I like to look when it comes to building out titles, for instance, for videos, at what videos of mine have done well in the past with the high click-through rate. And looking at the structure of the title and seeing, can I use that same structure for my next video? Or looking at competitors whose videos have done well. A lot of YouTubers will copy a lot what a successful video is. They'll like basically make the same title, same thumbnail, and same topic. And I've certainly done that in the past, I think especially when I was trying to ramp things up. But I don't do that anymore. I really just try to, I think maybe it's just with experience. Like I'm better now at knowing what videos are going to do well, like being the person people copy, I hope. Right. But there's always an element of, okay, what titles have done well? And like, can I like, okay, I know I made a video once called How to Master Google Gemini. It did really well. I'm going to make a video called How to Master Claude. And then a video of how to master ChatGPT. I'm going to keep doing that until it stops working. So
I heard there's a new tool called Bait.
Bait?
Yeah. And then fill in the... Sorry. Oh. It's a good one.
That's
good one.
Really yeah. Good.
All right. So kind of funny thing. And this is a great way to get like titles. It's hard to pivot from that, but everybody get your mind out of the gutter. I'm actually doing a video collab with a YouTube guitarist, and I interviewed him a couple weeks ago, and he was telling me about a video that he basically got the title from a completely different genre. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I can't even remember. It was something of a channel that his kids watch. And it's like the guitar pedals I wish I had when I was a kid, or like my dream pedal, something like that. So he just got the title, and then it kind of creates the form. I mean, he's a YouTuber, so he knows what to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great area where it's not like, you know, ripping off the idea from the same industry. It's just like, this idea works here, and we can make the analogous video here, which there's no real question, but I'm like, I'm curious if you've done that where you're like, you see a great video format in a different topic area, and you're like, oh, this actually would work well for AI.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like that? Definitely.
Do you have an example?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. There was this great video I just saw. I saw the title. I was like, wow, that is a good title. I'm trying to remember what it was. It was a video about how to sleep better. And so I think the video title was something like, this is going to suck for 2 weeks, but it's going to fix your sleep. And I was like, oh, I want to know what that is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so I clicked on the video and I took a screenshot of it. I'm like, I don't know how, but I would love to make a title like this. Because like, this is going to suck for 2 weeks, but it'll fix your AI setup or something like that. Because like the amount of curiosity that drives was like, when I saw that, I was like, wow, that's a good title.
Yeah. And side tangent, and then we'll get into some of the grander AI topics from a cultural level. What kind of YouTube do you watch? Are you a viewer? Like, what are you into? Just even random stuff?
Yeah, a lot. It's probably my number one entertainment source, like yours. So I do watch a lot of AI YouTube to see what other people are doing. And I do get some ideas from that. It helps to see like what has like lasting power. So a lot of AI and productivity. And then from like the more fun side, there are a few vloggers I follow, or I don't even like, I feel like the funny part is I don't even like know some of their names. I just watch their videos. This guy who makes videos about his plants, and I don't like plants. I kill plants. And yet his videos are so calming to watch. I just love watching them. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Same kind of guilty pleasure for me. I watch like van life or like other nomadic traveler types. Mm. And we were just talking before, like I rented a camper van recently, and you have a truck camper.
Yeah.
And you had a camper van back in the day. And I love watching it. I could never do it long term. I think it could be like short little things, and maybe I would develop a appreciation for like longer term, but I love watching, and a good storyteller is a good storyteller. You know, like it doesn't matter the format, or if they're talking about plants, and it's just kind of interesting. And you know, there's some that I've watched for years and years. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like crazy.
You know them.
Yeah.
The other thing I like watching are tech reviews. I love like unboxing videos, and because I try not to buy too much stuff, but it's fun to like live vicariously and like see what people are buying, and so there's some, I enjoy that as well.
Yeah. YouTube's great. I do like it. Okay. Do you think AI is a bubble?
I think there's a bubble aspect to it. If you look at all the tools out there, I think it's pretty clear which ones are going to win. And it's no surprise. It's like the major ones you would think of: Google, Anthropic, OpenAI, a few other ones. But I think so much money is pouring into these smaller companies. And when I see how much they raise, sometimes I'm really surprised. I'm not sure who's giving them money. And it's not that they're bad. It's just, how do you compete when what you've just built can just be replaced in a month by these big companies? And they have so much money behind them, and so much staying power. So I think there is a bubble there. I don't think it's as big as some of the doomers say it is, though. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny. I ended up, like I mentioned, on these sort of anti-AI algorithmic topics. And it's, yeah, I mean, some people are like, they're like, this is going to be like one of the worst bubbles ever. And then it's interesting because the truth is never like exactly what they're saying. It's always somewhere in the middle of a couple of extremes. So,
yeah.
But yeah, the valuations have definitely been interesting. And to your point, you know, from a smaller tool standpoint, yeah, it's just, like you said, companies get acquired or whatever, and it's like, oh yeah, like OpenAI just added that functionality or whatever.
Yeah,
goes
yeah.
away. All right. What about any? Do you cover anything around like the economics of AI, data centers, any of the externalities, or you just stick to the tools and the happy side?
I stick to the positive side mostly. I don't spend a lot of time even researching that stuff. Someone in the audience is going to be mad at me for that, but it's understandable. But you know, I only have so much bandwidth, first of all. And I understand the concerns, but you know, it's such a, I feel like there's such like a veil around it. And I think like a lot of people, I don't know what to believe. I hear both sides talking about data centers use a lot of water and other people saying that's actually not true. And I don't, how am I supposed, like, I don't know. I don't know what to believe.
I saw
No, that was it. That was it.
Yeah, I saw some posts and it was like, golf courses use a lot of water too. And I'm like, oh yeah, golf course in the desert uses a lot of water, you know? But I have seen some of the, again, you don't know what to believe, but like, they're like a video where they've set up whatever generators at the data center. And it's just like a constant hum. It's a loud, and that seems horrible. I don't know how they're going to legislate that or deal with the class action lawsuits and just be like, oh, we're just going to give everybody like a couple $100,000 and just don't worry about it anymore.
Yeah. I think, and I've seen stuff like that too. And I think that's, I mean, that seems common sense to me. Like when people, I think there were some reports of people near data centers who don't have water anymore. And like, obviously that needs to be fixed. And like, that's wrong. Like no question about it. And things like the loud noises, that's wrong. And selling the data center land when it was supposed to be used for a museum or whatever. There was a new story about that. I forget what it was. I don't think it was a museum or park, maybe. Like that was wrong.
Yeah. And
I think we all should be against stuff like that.
I kind of skipped around a little bit, but I'm curious about your thoughts on vibe coding. It sounds like you don't dabble in those dark arts, but I have, in the where I'm coming from, I used to code. I have a computer engineering degree, so I have some light, I have some experience, but it's been many years. And when people were vibe coding, I was like, some of it seems like kind of okay, but like what I started to see was like people that didn't know what they were doing immediately trying to sell software that kind of didn't work. And I was like, you guys are idiots. Like, what are you even doing? And then they would try to get a few users and then like sell it and then leave all the, they would sell lifetime license or whatever. Those were quite popular. So anyway, do you have any thoughts, maybe as an observer of other people vibe coding?
Yeah, no, and I have vibe coded. I've vibe coded a few apps for myself or simple computer programs. And so I have some thoughts on it. I think that vibe coding, and I've made some videos about that, I think it's great for individuals who want to create personalized apps. And I see that being used a lot more in the future, very near future. So like we were talking about before, last year I was trying to cut back on the expenses for my business. And so if I had the same tools I have now, some of the software I'd canceled, I could just vibe code an app for myself that could replace a paid subscription. Or if there is a software that, there's no software that's perfect for what I need, I can make what's perfect for me. And so I think for a use case for personalized software, I think it's a fantastic tool. I think it's really cool. I've built some things for myself with it that are pretty neat, but I haven't shared some of them because they're not for everyone. But I think when you get into the territory of selling, that's when you have to know a little bit more about what's being built and how it works, because there's complexities to it. And I've run a software company sort of in the past, and it was really hard and annoying. Just like all the customer service, all the bugs and fixes and improvements. It's not easy. So, yeah, I'm all for it for personal software.
Makes perfect sense. And I think in some ways, the people that were in the make money online area mm-hmm. have moved to AI because it's like the new exciting thing. There's growth opportunities. They were trying to make money, right? There's money to be made and you could teach other people how to make money. Do you kind of view it as the same sort of make money online? It's just like the new frontier. And then if so, how do you stay on the, you know, the positive side of this?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So I think that, yeah, there's been a big pivot I see. And I think people are still in that make money online, but they're like, well, you can make money online with AI and, you know, here's how you can do it. Is that what you mean? Is that?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a lot of that. Or people selling software that they just vibe coded.
Right.
And for me, I guess I'm fortunate that like, I don't need to focus on trying to maximize the profit. I make a good amount what I do, making YouTube videos, and I'm happy with that. I love doing it. And so, I think I'm just trying to be content with that. So,
right. And it's less stress. I mean, I have to imagine it's less stressful if you're like before you mentioned, you're focusing on doing good videos that you're mm-hmm. interested in, you're staying in your lane.
Yeah.
And you're avoiding courses, communities, like any of the other stuff that you could add to like maximize revenue kind yeah. of thing.
Yeah. And I can do fun stuff. Like I vibe coded a Chrome extension and I released it for free. And I think it's like 20,000 users of it. So,
oh, wow. What's it do?
So Google Gemini, it used to not have folders. And so I vibe coded an app that gave it folders as Chrome extension. Now they have folders, so I haven't been keeping up with it, but you know, it certainly helped that I made a video about it on my YouTube channel. Like that's, I'm not blind to that. Like that's very obviously why it did so well. But it was free anyway. So like, yeah. It was just a fun project learning how to vibe that's code cool. and throw something on the Google Store.
What's coming up for you in the next 6 months, a year?
Some more YouTube videos, just YouTube. And it's not up to me. It's whatever they release. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think every day I sort of ask myself like, is this going to last? I don't know. I've done a lot of businesses in the past and all of them have failed at some point for one reason or another. Maybe me, because I'm the bottleneck or tired out from it. So yeah, I kind of have to be like we were talking about before, I kind of have to be zen about it. And okay with it going away at some point. But while it's here, I want to take advantage of it and make as many videos that do well because I really like that and I really love doing that. So, yeah.
Where can people find you?
You can find me on YouTube, Paul J. Lipsky, or you can go to my website, which I vibe coded. It's pauljlipsky.com, but just go to YouTube.
Yeah, cool. I'll link up to that. And thanks a lot. Fun conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.